Argument from petitioners in San Antonio ISD versus McKinney.
May it please the court, the beginning and title of the argument is
May it please the court, I am here this morning to discuss with you the implications of the doctrine of res judicata on a case that has been in our state court for some years and before that in federal courts. The case arose in San Antonio, Texas in 1988 when Mr. Charles McKinney, the respondent, who was a band director at a high school within the San Antonio Independent School District, was terminated by a vote of the board. Mr. McKinney exercised his rights to appeal that decision to the Texas Education Agency, which he did, and at the same time, he filed a lawsuit in federal court in San Antonio contending that his termination had been race-motivated in violation of Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. The case proceeded forward administratively before the TEA, where Mr. McKinney contended that there had been a violation of a provision in the education code requiring that a majority of the elected members of a board must vote to terminate a continuing contract teacher, which he was at the time. The vote of the board was 3-2 rather than 4-2, and therefore he formulated that as his point of appeal. The federal lawsuit proceeded forward. Depositions were taken. Written discovery was undertaken. Finally, motion for summary judgment was filed and ruled upon by Judge Prado, dismissing his case arising under Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. During the course of the proceedings before the district court in the federal proceeding, Mr. McKinney had made statements and representations to that court through his counsel that there was this action pending before the Texas Education Agency, which involved, as I pointed out in my brief, the same facts as those presently before the federal court. And in one document, the representation was made that there would be an amendment of that pleading in federal court to bring in that cause of action once it was appropriate, meaning once the TEA had finished with the matter. During the course of Mr. McKinney's deposition, he testified as to his belief that the application of Section 13.114 of the Education Code, which is the provision requiring a vote of the majority of the elected board, served the purpose of supporting his claim of race discrimination. In addition to that, in the pretrial order that was submitted to the federal court, there was a provision in that order contending that the violation of Section 13.114 of the Education Code, or its alleged violation, was in fact evidentiary of his claim of race discrimination. As indicated, Your Honors, the federal lawsuit was dismissed, but prior to its dismissal, there was the instant case filed in Bexar County in district court, contending that the failure of the district to abide by 13114 constituted a breach of contract, and also Mr. McKinney sued, in his words, to enforce the decision of the commissioner. The Commissioner of Education had made a prior ruling supporting his position. That ruling was not appealed by either side to Travis County District Court, and Mr. McKinney, as stated, later filed his action contending there was a breach of contract. Prior to the disposition of the state court case, the federal court case was disposed of by entry of a final order on summary judgment. That case was not appealed. Thereafter, there were motions filed at the trial court in this case, at which time initially Mr. McKinney filed a motion for partial summary judgment, which was denied by the trial court. Thereafter, a motion for summary judgment was filed on behalf of the school district and the trustee defendants, which was granted. The fourth court, it was granted based upon arguments that were made relating to the issue before this court, and that is whether the doctrine of res judicata or claims preclusion should apply, in that Mr. McKinney should have brought his lawsuit relating to his claim of contractual breach and other matters before the federal court. The Court of Appeals concluded that the trial court had erred and held that Mr. McKinney would have been unable to bring his action in federal court because of the fact that the federal court would not have had jurisdiction due to the imposition of the 11th Amendment to the United States Constitution. And so holding...
Mr. Annenberg, there never was another vote of the board other than the 3-2 vote?
No, Your Honor, there was not. There was an agreement between counsel for both parties to hold that matter in abeyance rather than to conduct another hearing. There was an agreement that was entered into to hold that in abeyance pending the resolution of the matter before the TEA and any related litigation. That matter is still in abeyance.
But I understood that the commissioner found that it should have been a 4-2 vote, a majority vote.
Yes, Your Honor. The commissioner found in favor of Mr. McKinney.
So now why would it still be in abeyance?
Well, because at that time it was agreed that Mr. McKinney would have another hearing. There would be the school board would reconvene and conduct another hearing, and rather than do that, the parties agreed for their mutual convenience not to do that, but rather to await, by that time we had litigation pending, to wait until there was a determination of the outcome of the litigation.
The federal litigation?
Yes, at that time it was the federal litigation. But there was an agreement to withhold the conducting of another hearing before the board.
So is it then a correct statement that after the commissioner rendered the decision to require the district to reinstate Mr. McKinney, the trustees have never held another meeting to vote or to reinstate him or not reinstate him?
Your Honor, in accordance with the agreement that I set forth, that's correct.
So can we characterize that agreement as one that circumvents the commissioner's order for purposes of the parties continuing the litigation?
It certainly delayed implementation of that order, Your Honor.
So is it a correct statement that the school board has never had the opportunity on its own to follow the commissioner's order or have another meeting and take a vote to see whether they still adhere to the same position?
Your Honor, it has not. The board has not reconvened and heard that matter because of the stipulation between the parties that would be done at the conclusion.
And your statement was the stipulation between the parties was for their convenience to conclude the federal litigation vis-a-vis the title, whatever it was.
It's the federal race discrimination statute, Your Honor. Yes, that is correct. The parties agreed not to. This hearing took 8 days before the school board. And it is my belief, although I was not a party to that agreement, since I was not serving as counsel in that capacity, it is my understanding that because of the projected fact that there would be an additional 6 or 7 or 8 day hearing because of the number of witnesses that were called, that both sides, both parties, made that agreement.
And no further agreement was made after the federal court litigation was terminated adverse to Mr. McKinney?
No, Your Honor. By then, we had the state court case moving forward, and I assume the parties were under the impression that...
So there's no court that knows whether the school board would adhere to the commissioner's order?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I missed that.
That there's no court that's going to know whether the school board would adhere to the commissioner's order to reinstate Mr. McKinney.
Your Honor, that depends upon this court's ruling. If, in fact, this court rules favorably to the petitioner's position, that is correct. If, however, this case is sent back, then, under the terms of the agreement between the parties, we will convene another hearing. There will be another board hearing.
Are you then asking this court for an advisory opinion about the implication of the law to this set of facts when there's already an order in place that would require the school board to reinstate it that's never been appealed from?
No, Your Honor. What I'm asking the court to do is to make a determination that the respondent should have litigated the issues in his state court case in the federal court proceeding, and that based upon this court's teachings in Barr v. Resolution Trust and other cases, that he is barred by res judicata from maintaining his action in state district court for breach of contract, which is the substance of the case before this court.
If the Court of Appeals was wrong about the 11th Amendment as it applies to the school district, you still have to show that res judicata is valid, don't you?
That is absolutely correct.
Something that you've not really argued here in this court. Is that right?
Your Honor,
or have you?
Well, I would suggest that the representations that were made by counsel in the federal court case are crystal clear.
But then we would have to determine whether the United States District Court would have taken jurisdiction of the claim.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And there, since there's no federal jurisdiction, I take it.
No original jurisdiction.
So there would have to be pendant jurisdiction.
Yes, sir.
So the issue involves that even if you're right about not being the state, the question is whether the district court would have exercised pendant jurisdiction over this claim.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in regard to that, in Pennhurst, which is the case relied upon by the Court of Appeals, there the Supreme Court clearly was dealing with state officials. To the extent that it dealt with some county officials, as discussed in that case, the court simply concluded that in order to implement the widespread relief that was requested in that case involving a mental health facility in Ohio, that it would not be possible to do that with the county officials that were in that lawsuit. In Pennhurst, in footnote 34, the Supreme Court specifically upheld the case which is cited in my brief, which is Mount Healthy City Board of Education versus Doyle. And in Doyle, the Supreme Court specifically held that the 11th Amendment prohibition did not apply to a school district and did not insulate a school district from liability. And therefore, based upon the Mount Healthy case, which is still good law, and based upon the court's statement even in Pennhurst in the footnote, it is my belief that the federal court could certainly have entertained jurisdiction, particularly when the court considers that in 1990, as of December the 1st of that year, the Congress passed the Supplemental Jurisdiction Statute, which is not in my brief, but which I would like to bring to the attention of the court. That's a 28 United States Code 1367. The Supplemental Jurisdiction Statute was passed by the Congress in view of a case that the United States Supreme Court decided in 1988, which held that pendant jurisdiction should not be exercised, but on very rare occasions. The Supplemental Jurisdiction Statute changed that substantially.
And, you characterize this in your state court jurisdiction argument as an administrative appeal, something that is an appeal in the nature of an appeal from the commissioner's decision, do you not?
I argued in my other point of error that that's what it should have been, but it was not brought that way.
If it should have been that, it would be sort of unlikely that the U.S. District Court would take jurisdiction of something like that.
Your Honor, if that lawsuit had been filed in federal court in Travis County under the old Administrative Procedures Act, which was required at that time, I would agree with the court that Judge Mallon or whomever would probably defer jurisdiction in that case and remand it back to the state court. My point in that regard is that if, in fact, this is going to be an appeal of an administrative order, it had to be done in accordance with the Administrative Procedures Act, and that is to file the lawsuit in Travis County District Court within 30 days after the finality of the commissioner's decision. That was not done. And therefore, my characterization of the cause of action of the plaintiff at the trial court below was that it was a breach of contract cause of action. The contract that Mr. McKinney had incorporates the laws in the state of Texas, and therefore the education code by definition is included within those laws. And so his action really was an action for breach of contract. That's the only kind of action he could have brought in Bexar County. That's my belief. The supplemental jurisdiction statute is important. It is my belief that it would have allowed Judge Prado to entertain those claims. Counsel for Mr. King certainly thought those claims could be entertained because of the representations that were made by him and that are contained in this record. The issue as to whether or not the school district is susceptible to suit in federal court in the face of the 11th Amendment, I believe, was resolved not only by Mount Healthy and also Pennhurst, but also by a case cited by the Fifth Circuit, Farias versus Bexar County Board of Trustees for Mental Health and Mental Retardation, in which local officials were not allowed the luxury of asserting the 11th Amendment as a bar to their lawsuit. We relied at the trial court on Lopez versus the Houston Independent School District. There, the court held that the school district was not an 11th Amendment state entity. The fourth court did not agree. However, we still rely upon Lopez and still believe it's good law. Judge Nowlin recently decided a case called Smith versus Travis County Election District, Education District, which involved an entity similar to school districts. So it is my belief that, with respect to the 11th Amendment argument, it is clear that there is an entitlement on behalf of this plaintiff at the trial court below to maintain that suit. It happens every day. It happens every day that when you have a lawsuit in federal court, that there are joined with those cases, or with those causes of action, causes for breach of contract. It happens every day. That is one of the concerns that I had with this decision. This is, as the court knows, a published opinion.
Counsel, your time has expired. Are there any questions? Thank you. The court is ready to hear arguments from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Truman W. Dean.
And please the court, my name is Truman Dean. I'm from the Texas State Teachers Association Staff Council representing respondent. There's a couple of points I want to quickly make. We filed a lawsuit in San Antonio, Bexar County, to enforce the commissioner's decision. It was an enforcement action as well as breach of contract because the school district refused to reinstate him. They did not.
Excuse me. Was this statement correct that there was an agreement between council to forego any additional school board hearings until the litigation was over? Is that correct?
That's partially correct. There was an agreement. We wanted him immediately reinstated as the commissioner ordered. They refused. We filed the lawsuit. They said, we're putting you to a school board hearing, and we agreed to postpone a second school board hearing until the state court and federal court case were over with. But we filed the state court lawsuit to enforce the commissioner's decision to reinstate Charles McKinney. We also filed a breach of contract action in Bexar County for damages. But the reason we filed the lawsuit is they refused and failed to reinstate him, which they were ordered to do by the commissioner, and that's what this state court case is about. Now, we don't disagree with the Court of Appeals decision, but we do not believe it's necessary for this court to go as far as the Court of Appeals. The issue in this case is very narrow and very small. You didn't grant writ on Point Bexar 1, which was over jurisdiction and venue in Bexar County. You only granted writ on the 11th Amendment immunity question. So the issue, what I'm asking for is a very narrow, small, insignificant extension of Pennhurst, which is when a state administrative agency issues an order, that order is to be enforced in state court, not federal court, because of 11th Amendment implications. In other words, let me give you an example outside of McKinney. I had a case against the school district a long time ago for a black female, which also involved whistleblowing, and she was terminated. Well, we brought a suit in federal court alleging race and sex, and we also alleged the Texas Whistleblower Act in federal court. We're not arguing with that. That's permissible. That's a pendant state claim. But let's say we had handled it differently. Let's say we had taken the Texas whistleblower case and had gone through the TEA procedure and gone to the commissioner and gotten an order from the commissioner, yes, the Texas Whistleblower Act was violated and I order you to reinstate her. At that point, what we're saying is you cannot take that state agency order and take it into federal court and get it enforced because of the 11th Amendment.
Do you think you could file the breach of contract action?
In this case, like the Court of Appeals ruled in this case, they're so intertwined, they're exactly on the same issues that it wouldn't have made sense. But yes, you can't normally file a breach of contract case in federal court. But the argument we made, in which the Court of Appeals accepted, is that McKinney's lawsuit to enforce the commissioner's decision and his breach of contract were so intertwined they should be brought in the same place.
But do you think that once the district court concluded there was no violation of federal law, that it would have retained jurisdiction under pendant jurisdiction of the breach of contract claim, that that's how it viewed the claim?
Well, as the Court of Appeals, points out in its decision, the federal court never reached the state court issue. He never ruled specifically on the commissioner's decision. The lawyers who took over McKinney's case in federal court just argued the commissioner's decision is evidence of race discrimination.
But as you know, and the question for race judicata is whether you could have brought it there.
Right, and our position is no, that you could not.
Even as a breach of contract?
No, but not because of the unique circumstances of this case, as the Court of Appeals ruled that they were totally intertwined.
But if it had only been a breach of contract claim, you could have.
Yes, yes, but in this case, with the statutory claim being the breach of contract, then they were hopelessly intertwined, and they would have to be brought in state court together.
So now, they were indistinct? Or is that what you're arguing?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
They were indistinct? So why couldn't you have brought those in federal court if there was no real distinction between the two claims?
Because our position is today, and it's been our position all along, that a state administrative agency order cannot be enforced by a federal court against the state of Texas. And I want to, against the school district of the state of Texas. And I wanted to quote part of Pennhurst just for 1 second. It says, it is difficult.
And that's because the 11th Amendment, its effect
prohibition
on the state school district, not because the federal court could not have addressed the breach of contract and the suit to enforce the commissioner's decision in federal court.
I think if he had simply brought a simple breach of contract case, yes, he could have brought it in federal court. The enforcement of the commissioner's order, in our opinion, could not be brought in federal court because of the 11th Amendment. And as the Court of Appeals stated, it was proper to bring that in state court because they're totally intertwined. I mean, our breach of contract is based on the same statute, which was 13.114. I mean, we said you breached this contract by violating 13.114. That's our breach of contract action, based on the statutory violation. But in Pennhurst, the court said, it is difficult to think of a greater intrusion on state sovereignty than when a federal court instructs state officials on how to conform their conduct to state law. Such a result conflicts directly with principles of federalism that underline the 11th Amendment. Now, the petitioner has not cited you one case in his brief, either to the Court of Appeals or to you, where a federal court has enforced a state administrative agency order based on state law. And Judge Nallen's decision that was cited by petitioner Smith v. Travis County Educational District, Judge Nallen writes a full page on page 1184 about, well, since this is a federal due process claim and not based on a Texas state constitutional claim or a Texas state statute claim, I will hear it since it's brought under the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And it was very clear from reading that part of his decision that if it had been based on a state court claim or a state law claim or a state constitutional claim, that he would not have heard it because of the 11th Amendment. But he wrote a full page on the fact that this is a federal due process claim brought under the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It's a federal case, and I will hear it. In Section 5 of the 14th Amendment enforcement provisions, make it clear that in civil rights cases, which is what Lopez was, which is cited by petitioners, that Section 5 of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution limits the 11th Amendment. That's why Lopez and cases in Monell and cases like that can be brought in federal court and have state pendant claims, because of the 14th Amendment limitation on the 11th Amendment. But as the Court of Appeals correctly pointed out in their decision, I don't have a civil rights case in my state court case. I'm not claiming race discrimination. I'm not claiming First Amendment. I'm not claiming 14th Amendment due process. I don't have any state constitutional claims. All I'm trying to do is enforce the commissioner's order to reinstate the petitioner. I mean, respondent, excuse me. I want a remand to the district court where the district court will order the San Antonio Independent School District to follow the commissioner's order and reinstate the respondent unless and until they lawfully terminate him, which they have failed and refused to do all these years. That's why we filed the lawsuit, to enforce the commissioner's decision. We also filed a breach of contract. And he raises in this point of error one before this court, which you all did not grant writ on, that my jurisdiction and venue was proper in Bexar County, and I did have a right to file an enforcement action in Bexar County. So that's not just...
Are you anywhere in this process, have you argued that if the 11th Amendment did not prohibit this claim from being brought in federal court, that res judicata still would not apply?
I have not made that argument.
So the issues that have been presented by the parties here are strictly whether or not the 11th Amendment applies or doesn't apply. One wins or loses depending on how we rule on that issue.
Yes, Your Honor. And in our opinion, and this is a very narrow, small extension of Pennhurst, very small extension, very narrow extension, which is when a state, any state administrative agency enters an order against the party, that order is to be enforced in state court and does not belong in federal court. And that language I read you from Pennhurst a moment ago supports that proposition, and the Court of Appeals supported that proposition. Now, there's been, petitioner has cited the language of the lawyer represented Mr. McKinney in federal court that he was going to amend to add the commissioner's decision to the federal court litigation. Attached to my brief to the Court of Appeals is petitioner's response to or reply to the McKinney's federal reply to their motion for summary judgment. And the heading on this is plaintiff's reliance upon the determination of the Commissioner of Education regarding the procedures attendant to the termination of plaintiff McKinney bears no relevance to plaintiff's case claims of racial discrimination. And petitioner argued in federal court, don't look at the commissioner's decision. It's irrelevant. It has nothing to do with race discrimination. You shouldn't consider it. It's not evidence of race discrimination. It's not before you. You know, it's not before you. And now they're arguing res judicata after they argued before the federal court. Don't consider it. Don't consider it. And the federal court lawsuit was never amended to add the enforcement of the commissioner's decision. McKinney's lawyer simply cited the commissioner's decision as evidence of racial discrimination. They did not attempt to enforce the action in federal court, nor do I think they could have. I guess the question is, could they have? And my answer is no.
Because it would not have had pendant jurisdiction?
No, because a state administrative agency order based on state law should only be enforced by state courts, not by federal courts.
Not so under principles of res judicata, you're not arguing that you could not have brought it in federal court
But, I'm sorry, for principles, under principles of pendant jurisdiction, you're not arguing that you could not have physically brought it. You're just saying because of the 11th Amendment, could not have brought it.
Right. Because of the 11th Amendment, I could not bring an action to enforce the commissioner's decision in federal court. I would have been precluded from doing so.
And Mr. Dean, let's focus on the 11th Amendment. What test or what analysis or what rules should we be governed by in determining whether or not the 11th Amendment is applicable in this case to school districts?
I guess the... Like I said before, you do not have to go as far as the Court of Appeals did to rule in my favor. I think what you should start with...
How far did the Court of Appeals go?
Well, what I'm saying is for you to affirm the Court of Appeals, I don't think you have to accept all their analysis or go as far as they did with Pennhurst. What I'm arguing is you start with Pennhurst and then give me a narrow, small extension of Pennhurst. But the first case I would refer you to is Pennhurst, which is what the Court of Appeals relied on.
Well, if an agency receives funding from the state, is that sufficient to implicate the 11th Amendment?
I guess it would depend on how much funding and how much independence the agency has. The affidavit that
we
have...
Well, would that mean a school district like Highland Park in Dallas that gets no state funds is not an arm of the state, but... This school district that gets 70% of its funds from the state is a part of the state arm?
Well, I'm not sure that Highland Park doesn't receive state funds. I'm not sure, Your Honor.
Well,
but, you
assume
know,
for the purpose of the hypothet that some school districts, as we've held in Edgewood, get no funding from the state and other
right.
schools get 100% of the funding.
Right.
Should that make a distinction as to how we treat those school districts with respect to the 11th Amendment?
I guess you could make that argument, but... my argument is a little bit different than that. My argument is, the argument that I'm putting forth today is that simply that a state administrative agency order cannot and should not be enforced in federal court when it's based on state law. It should be only enforced in state court. It is true that 70% of San Antonio Independent School District funds during the relevant year came from the state of Texas. That is true, and that was commented on by the Court of Appeals, but that's exactly what I'm talking about, that for me to win, for respondents to win, you don't have to go that far in the analysis. You simply have to make a narrow extension of Pennhurst that a state administrative agency order should not be enforced in federal court because of the 11th Amendment. And
what
that's my argument.
What is the posture of this case? It's been remanded to...
Well, I lost at the district court level based on the 11th Amendment. He said it was res judicata.
No, no, but right, if this court affirms the Court of Appeals...
What would happen next?
And the case goes back to the trial court, but you stipulated that there'll be no reinstatement or no hearing until the litigation is complete.
Oh, well, I'm glad you brought that up. I did not stipulate there'd be no reinstatement. I sued to get reinstatement.
Well, that's what I'm...
You know, I sued to get reinstatement. That's what I'm trying to do is get the district court... Now, if you affirm and I win, I will go back to the district court. I will file a partial motion for summary judgment to enforce the commissioner's decision to get the district court to compel them to let him come back to work next year, not now, but next year at the beginning of the school year at San Antonio Independent School District. And then I was
as a band director?
Yes, as a band director.
In the same school that he was in?
I'm not sure we would fight over the same school. I don't know how important that is to my client, but we want him back as a band director at the school district.
An assistant band director somewhere?
We want him back as a band director. There's a, in the school district...
We had this problem about coaches.
Right, right.
Well, he'd be head coach
well,
or,
right.
or reassigned to some of the...
We have the same problem with band directors, but the point is the commissioner ruled that my client was illegally terminated,
but
were ordered to reinstate him, and they refused.
Then my next question is, assuming that happens and he is reinstated, is the board then... free to have another hearing to decide whether or not he should be terminated?
Yes, I think they are. I would go forward with my district court case to get my contract damages.
The year he was terminated.
For the year he was terminated. Plus, he is working at the Dallas Independent School District, but each year he's making less than he would be making at the San Antonio School District.
So one of the possible outcomes, if we were to affirm the Court of Appeals, is that the San Antonio Independent School District can have another hearing, and if they get the requisite number of votes to terminate his contract,
Or I could win. You know, I mean, they might terminate him, or I might win the school board hearing, and he may not be terminated a second time. I mean, it was a close vote, 3-2. You know, and I think it'd be a close vote again. I may end up with the vote.
But assuming they terminate it in the second hearing, you would still be fighting for, of course, the lost wages he had.
Because of the breach, yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor. For this point, up to that point. And then what we do after the second termination, we would have to make a second separate decision about how to proceed after that.
Probably file another lawsuit and fight it in infinitum.
Well, that would be up to the client if he wanted to continue fighting or if he wanted to stay at DISD, I guess. What I'm simply proposing today is a small extension of Pennhurst.
You keep talking about extension. Is that an application of Pennhurst?
Yes, application or extension of a very narrow bunch of issues, and that when you have a state administrative agency order based on state law, it should be enforced in state court, not in federal court. It's none of the federal court's business under, thank you very much.
Any questions? Thank you.
Court is ready to hear rebuttal.
I too urge the implications of Pennhurst, but certainly disagree with those implications. As I indicated, Pennhurst, I believe, is clear that the county officials that were involved as defendants in that lawsuit were not subject to the prohibitions or protections of the 11th Amendment. I think the opinion is clear on that. In Pennhurst, it is interesting that some of the issues that were raised by the plaintiffs below involved applications of a state statute. It wasn't strictly a 14th Amendment claim of denial of due process because of the conditions of the facility in which these people were institutionalized, but rather it was also an application of the state law of Ohio in that particular case, or Pennsylvania, I'm sorry. Reliance has also been made on the Kitchens case, clearly involving the State Department of Health in the state of Texas, the Fifth Circuit case. That was relied upon, I believe, by the court below. That case, once again, applies strictly to state actors and does not apply to actors such as the school district or the trustees. In the case that I mentioned before, the Doyle case, in part, the Supreme Court states, petitioner is but one of many local school boards within the state of Ohio. It is subject to some guidance from the State Board of Education and receives a significant amount of money from the state. But local school boards have extensive powers to issue bonds and to levy taxes within certain restrictions of state law. As the court is very well aware, so does the state of Texas, and so do those school boards in Texas. I was reminded when I came up here this morning that they are called independent school districts, meaning they do have certain independent rights. And certainly the school districts in the state of Texas have the authority to set the tax rates and do many things that this court is well aware of by virtue of the Edgewood litigation. The court continues. On balance, the record before us indicates that a local school board, such as petitioner, is more like a county or city than it is like an arm of the state. We therefore hold that it is not entitled to assert any 11th Amendment immunity from suit in the federal courts. That, Your Honors, I believe is the law with respect to the application of the 11th Amendment to school districts in this state. And because of that, I believe that the court should reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals and hold that the 11th Amendment does not shield school districts from actions, regardless of the characterization, and therefore that, conceded by counsel, the doctrine of res judicata applies, and this case should be reversed and amended.
Thank you. Question. Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument, and the court calls the court for taking another brief recess.